Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Mark Costello, Senator Heather Staines, John Allen Stewart, and Todd Stump. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. There are 57 days to go before the Republican convention in Cleveland. That'll immediately be followed by the Democratic convention in Philadelphia, and 169 days to go before Election Day. And let us begin with the latest poll. This, according to ABC Washington Post, it was released late yesterday. It has Donald Trump in the lead at 46% to Hillary Clinton's 44%. And again, 46, 44, it's within basically the margin of error. But again, this appears to be a race that conceivably could be close, although maybe a couple of weeks ago, a lot of Democrats thought that maybe it was going to be a cakewalk. But I think we will find out tonight that maybe there's not a lot of people that think it's going to be a slam dunk for Hillary Clinton. Todd Stump joins us. Todd, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
You have been involved in conservative politics and libertarian politics for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You market. You were a strong believer in the Constitution.
I am.
The last time you were on this show, I think you were singing the praises of some Republican position. But you were here tonight, and you represent mm-hmm. perhaps many people listening to the show and in this country. You are not absolutely going to vote for Donald Trump, mm-hmm. and you absolutely are not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. What are you going to do in November?
Well, first of all, the reason I don't feel that the Republican Party has a prior claim on my vote. Right? I call myself a Republican in the past because that was the party that best advanced conservative principles in which I believe. That is no longer seems to be the case. The short answer of why not to vote for Trump before was because he's going to lose. I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. But what I'm going to do is either leave the choice for president open, or I'm going to vote for the libertarian candidate, likely who's Gary Johnson.
But you said in a mm-hmm. comment to me or a tweet to me earlier this week,
mm-hmm.
you said, I can't vote for Trump because
mm-hmm.
I'll lose my soul. If I vote for Hillary Clinton, I'll lose my country. What did you mean by that?
Well, first of all, when it comes to I think they're both disqualified, both on character issues, on temperament issues, and based on their record. I mean, Hillary Clinton is a felon, right? And Donald Trump has specifically.
She's a felon in waiting.
Yeah, she has not.
Okay,
she's not a convicted felon,
okay,
but she certainly has committed felonies.
We'll be specific here, then. Okay.
And when it comes to Donald Trump, when it comes to that aspect, he has explicitly advocated that as president, he would order American military troops to commit premeditated murder on the families of terrorists, of suspected terrorists. So he's going to order someone, an Army Ranger, to kick in the door of somebody in Cairo and tells one of our troops to murder an 8-year-old girl.
I want to ask Mark Costello joins us. Mark, you represent the left side of the table tonight. The times you've been on this program recently, you've been singing the praises of Bernie Sanders. But again, in a little comment that you sent out on your Facebook this afternoon, you said, I'm going to be introduced as a Bernie bro. But there was some reservation about that. You're not 100% on feeling the burn at the moment?
Sure. No, I'm still a big Bernie supporter. Bernie, to me, though, is a New Deal Democrat. I know some of this table would think he's very far left. But right now, the American voters don't really have a pro-peace candidate on the ticket. As Todd just alluded to, we have a lot of militarization on this ticket. Bernie represents some very good positions. I feel like he's picking up FDR's Second Bill of Rights idea and kind of carrying that mantle forward. Mm. But I think the progressive wing of the Democratic Party wants to keep pushing pushing these left issues that aren't so much in the spotlight these days.
John Allen Stewart joins us. John Allen, you've been on this program. You have run as a Republican congressional candidate. You're a former professional wrestler.
That's right.
When I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago, you said you were for John Kasich because you knew John Kasich. But right now, you are on the Trump train. You're on the bandwagon now. Why?
I am. Well, because I'm a fiscal conservative. You know, I think that without a doubt, the single greatest national security risk to this country is our debt and the monetization of the debt by the Federal Reserve. I'm a guy, and I've said this in my professional wrestling career and in politics and in my life as a businessman. I'm a guy that walks my talk. Don't tell me what you're going to do. Show me what you're going to do. And John Kasich was one of the ones that balanced the budget along with people like Newt Gingrich. And I respect that. And the fact that Donald Trump also believes that, that our debt is one of the biggest national security threats is something that I hold to. It's not only a national security threat. It is an insult to I'm a citizen. It's an insult to my children. It's an insult to my future grandchildren, if I'm so blessed to have those, that we have accrued such a debt that basically this country is bankrupt. And the head of the GOA has gone around the country for the past 4 years telling everyone, our accountant, that we are bankrupt.
All right. I want to now hear from Hillary Stanks. You're an Illinois state senator. You're for Hillary Clinton. Tell us why you were for Hillary Clinton. You've heard some very negative things, at least from Todd, about this.
There's more.
What is your...
I don't think we're the one to judge on that. I think if you look at it, there's sort of three real tests you might want to ask about who you want to be voting for and electing to be president. Can they actually get something positive results for real people? Two, can they actually keep us safe here in the country? And three, can they actually bring the country together? And I think on every one of those, it's clear that Hillary Rodham Clinton is by far the strongest candidate on these. In fact, I think some of the other candidates would really take us in the wrong direction.
How does she bring everybody together? What she was saying today, you know, stronger, you know, united we're stronger. I missed the phrase, but the point is, how can she do that when she is and has been for a long time one of the most polarizing figures in America? How does she bring people?
You know, I know there is this, and she has high negatives, although certainly not as high as Trump. But, you know, when you've actually seen her work, that her style really is bringing folks together. As a senator, she was very much able to do that. She's the one who got the CHIP program, a health insurance for kids program, together, and very much had to do that in a bipartisan fashion. I think when you see the way she operated as Secretary of State, she really did, I think, have a broad base of support sort of across the political spectrum and how she accomplished that. When she, in her actual roles that she's had, she is a person who sort of has a natural tendency, I think, to work on all sides of the aisle.
Okay, 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. We're talking about the campaign coming up. And also, if you're listening to the program this evening and you have decided you are for not the Republican, not the Democrat, but for a third party or a fourth party candidate, or you favor a third party, we want to hear from you tonight. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. And now around the world on the World Wide Web, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. Todd, I want to get back to you because people just tuned in. You're not for Trump. You're not for Hillary. You're going to either stay home or there's going to be a third choice for you. What about the idea that Bill Kristol is trying to float, along with Mitt Romney and others, for a third party, a conservative Republican third party option? Where do you come down on that idea?
It's an interesting logistical play, and that is if a third party candidate of whatever stripe could win enough states, even if it could just be a few, but if they're key states, they could deny either a major party candidate from getting a majority. And then there's going to be a real quick civics lesson across the country when people are going to find out that if no one gets an electoral majority, that it gets thrown to the House of Representatives, where the House votes by delegation, and the Republicans presently control either 33 or 34 delegations.
Would Trump win that race?
I think if Mitt Romney, for instance, had a dozen or two dozen electoral votes, he could, or John Kasich, if he were a favorite son of Ohio or something, could become
what
president.
What do you think of that idea, John?
I
think it's unlikely.
I'm going to have to repeat this because my brain is fried already. So the Republicans, in their infinite wisdom, want to have a third-party candidate. Basically, he's not going to win that many states for it to be thrown into the House. I can guarantee you that. But what he's going to do, what the Republicans will end up doing, is putting Hillary into the White House because they're going to take votes away from Trump.
No, but they're arguing that specific candidates would, and it doesn't even have to be one particular candidate. Mm-hmm. It could be John Kasich running in Ohio, Mitt Romney running in Massachusetts. So they only campaign in about four or five states, and literally there's one single goal: keep Hillary Clinton from 270. Now let me ask you this question, Professor.
Yes, sir.
How do you think the people would react to such a convoluted way, whose principal goal, two principal goals, to keep Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton from getting to 270? How would they react to that?
This
cynical public that's all upset with politics as usual.
Right, yeah, they're going to be so outraged. I mean, you've got millions of voters coming out for Trump, really excited. You've got all this energy behind Bernie. And, yeah, it would just be chaos. There's no way the electorate would sit still during that.
Heather, you agree with that?
I do. I absolutely do. And I think it would just take us further down the cynical path. I do think it's happened in history where, you know, it's really gone to the congressional. But that's been, you know, over 100 years. It sounds like you may know when the last time that actually happened once. Yeah, right.
it's only happened once.
And
Van Buren or Tilden?
Van Buren.
Certainly not in modern history. I think people would be outraged. I think that it would be further destabilizing. I think what we're seeing right now is a lot of anger across the country.
Do you have any communication at all with Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard? Because he was on ABC today, and over and over, and he would bring the subject back to, you know, possibly Ben Sasse, the senator from Nebraska, as being a, you know, guy that would go do that. I mean, certainly Ben Sasse couldn't believe that he would end up being the president.
They can, if I understand the rules correctly, and it's been a long time since I took the Constitution test, but I think that the House of Representatives has to choose among the top three electoral vote getters.
Right.
So Ben Sasse, coming from Nebraska, favorite son of Nebraska, wouldn't be among those three, presumably. But, you know, the argument against, oh, this would be chaos and this would be this and that, so what? Honestly. I mean, we are in a system right now where we have, out of 320 million people, right, we are left with a choice right now, presumably. I'm sorry, but I don't think Sanders can make it. But it's going to be between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, two people who believe in God knows what, except authoritarianism.
Well, let's take a look at the unfavorable ratings, because that came out in the ABC Washington Post poll today. Donald Trump is viewed unfavorably by 60% of the people. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton is viewed unfavorably by 53%. So you have two of the least popular, and yet they end up through this mechanism of where they are right today.
And it's I'm sorry, Heather.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to say that, you know, introducing a third candidate would be to thwart the will of the people is to accept the premise that the Democratic primary and the Republican primaries actually are designed to fulfill the will of the people, and they're just not.
So, well, but, again, that brings up the issue of superdelegates. Do you believe that one of the things that Bernie Sanders and his supporters will be demanding for the enthusiastic support of Hillary Clinton, if indeed she is the Democratic nominee, is there will be a change in the future Democratic nominating process where superdelegates will be a thing of the past or they will be greatly redefined.
I think that that will be on his agenda, I would guess. I don't know that for a fact, but I would presume that's likely to be on the agenda for what he would want to discuss towards making it a unifying, once he does concede, making a unifying aspect. I think that will be on the agenda. I think that the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign is likely to at least engage in the conversation. I don't know where that will come out, but that is a rule that I think will probably be at least discussed and on the table. I want to go back to what you said, though.
But would you, I'm going to give you a chance to do that, but would you support, I mean, do you think that superdelegates, in essence, are really undemocratic in this day and age?
You know, it goes back to these are sort of certainly fair playing rules. Everybody knew what they are and how they operate. And it goes back to, I think the public doesn't necessarily understand that it's not a full democratic vote. I mean, there is also party role in selecting your nominee, and it's always been structured that way in different ways, and each different state sort of has their own rules on how they operate right. I think I would probably support more full democracy on that. I tend to come out that way. But I think it's a fair way for parties to operate. Again, these are parties' decisions.
What was your other point you were going to
make? My other point, I was going to go back to the unfavorables. You talked about the high, and they are high unfavorables. But I think there's, in this high media environment, people come in very well known. I think that's much more of a statement than Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are just highly known individuals. And all I think everybody is flawed. I think it's easy to go after people's flaws and really highlight them in this media age 24/7. I think we haven't seen as much about Bernie Sanders. There's not been a negative ad campaign on him yet. Mm-hmm. I just think that anybody can come up to that. It's a very sad statement, but I think that's just easy in this day and age of 24/7.
Mark, I want to come back to you on the superdelegate issue. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the, as a Bernie supporter,
sure,
is that one of the things you would like to see Bernie and his supporters demand in Philadelphia, a change to that rule?
Sure. I mean, the point Bernie has, which is that, you know, 400 of these superdelegates were already committed at the outside of this process. Now, the fact that Bernie's sitting where he is, as close as he is, if you would have asked me a year ago, I would have thought that was impossible. You know, you used to call me, right, and you would kind of, you know, laugh at me, and I would laugh at myself because I would think there would be no way. But Bernie's, you know, Bernie has this authenticity. He has, you know, credibility, where Hillary is always going to be viewed as a politician who pivots based on polls and what is politically expedient, and that's part of the trust factor. But she's a competent politician. But this is not the year where we're looking. The public seems to be looking for competency.
Todd, you wanted to make a point?
Always. I was just going to say, I don't really it doesn't really bother me that the Democratic Party, you know, doesn't follow Democratic principles when nominating their candidate. They're their own organization. They could choose whatever rules they choose to. The problem I have is that the two parties have huge advantages against other political actors, right? They have automatic ballot access and the rest. So whatever party, whatever, I think the Libertarian Party just gets together in a ballroom in Las Vegas. That's fine for them, right? But everyone should be on equal footing each election cycle.
John, where do you come down? I want to ask you the question.
Sure.
Is that one of the, you know, just incredible thing that's happening this year is the crowds that Bernie Sanders is garnering, the enthusiasm, the young people. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about so many people going to the polls to support a Democratic socialist?
I'm all about the prospect of the American people getting excited into the political system again. You know, we've had, you know,
so that's good. Bernie Sanders,
I think it's fantastic. And I think the fact that Bernie Sanders' popularity, he's popular because he's a politician who is saying what he means, and people feel that he is saying what he means, which is part of the popularity of Donald Trump. I wanted to go back to the superdelegates because I agree with the senator over here. The fact that the delegates, and we knew the rules going in, it's the clubhouse boss's rules. You know, the voter wants to go into the ballot box, you know, and cast a vote and make that their vote counts. Not that them and their neighbors elect somebody, but the superdelegates overrule that vote and basically their vote doesn't count. That just increases the disparity and the cynicism of the American voter.
We should be clear, though, now that Hillary Clinton leads by over 3 million votes on the popular vote over Bernie Sanders and is up by about 290 delegates of the pledged delegates. nothing to do with the superdelegate. So, I mean, I think either way in this case, it's clear that Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee. And I think then there's going to be a lot of work then to be doing about unifying the Democratic Party, quite frankly.
Speaking about unifying, here's another thing that came out in the poll today. This was of Clinton Democrats. It talked about that 15% of Obama voters, listen to this, 15% of Obama voters say they will vote for Donald Trump. Your reaction to that? Is that much higher than you anticipated?
Well, listen, so if you go back to 2008, when it was Hillary versus Obama, and Hillary concedes, when she conceded, 40% of the Democratic voters at that point in time said they would vote for, they would not vote for Obama, of her supporters.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, when it came down to the actual vote, 90% of Democratic voters voted for Obama. And I think that's, you're going to see the same thing. I mean, this stuff is an evolution, and that's the way this tends to happen.
By the way, you've heard me umpteen times on this program over the years, I've always said if you're the Republican nominee, if you're the Democratic nominee, you start with 45% of the vote, and a campaign is who gets the 10%. And right now, where Trump is at 46, Hillary's at 44. In 2 weeks, she'll probably be at 44.
I think those 15% of those Bernie voters that voted for Obama were people like me. Anyone, Democrat or Republican, who can shake up Washington and twist the political process back in favor of American citizens.
1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Hop on the line and join us. 1-800-723-8289.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Before I go too much further, I want to thank the folks, an organization called Celebrating Senior Coalition, Seniors Coalition. They were based in River Forest and Oak Park, and last week they invited me to give a speech to their group, and they were very kind enough to give me a little award, a Lifetime Achievement Award, and I had to go there to explain the joys of being a senior citizen. And how did I survive? Do I celebrate? Do I suffer ageism? And again, it was a nice group to have there. The mayor of Oak Park and River Forest were there, and about 100 other people. It was nice. So thank you very much for inviting me.
Are there mixed feelings when they give you a lifetime achievement?
A lifetime. I got one years ago. It was long before I had achieved much. So, but anyway, it was a surprise. It was nice to have it, but good to group. But really, a great group out there. Todd, you wanted to make a point, and then we're going to go to calls.
I did. When I think Heather is right in that Bernie Sanders supporters and other Democrats who are dissatisfied with the Clinton candidacy are going to come home. Democrats always come home because the Democratic Party is largely a transactional party, and that is you have a group of factions who really don't necessarily have all that much to do in common except the fact that they're asking the government for something. So it doesn't matter who the candidate is, as long as that candidate can win. And that's why I think that Hillary Clinton, no matter what her negatives are, that she can count on her base, that Democratic base that you talked about, will deliver.
But do you factor in the youth and political inexperience of many of the the supporters. I want to get your reaction because these are your students, right. And the point is, you know, when you're you know 20 years old and you've lost your first political election, sometimes they don't know they're supposed to lick their wounds and get up and march to the polls.
Sure, yeah, it was very interesting. Had you asked me a few years ago, the students that I encountered were often very, very unquestionably patriotic and pro the establishment politics because they grew up in the specter of 9/11. And today, though, you're starting to see some criticism and some criticality coming, and they want to see change. You know, they see that there's problems out on the horizon, and Hillary's going to have trouble reaching out to those students because she just doesn't have that. Everything seems rehearsed. Everything seems staged. And she's very competent. She's a good politician. She does good work when she hits the ground. But when it comes to conveying that authenticity to people, Hillary's always so stiff. And I wish she could do better, but she's going to have a hard time.
Well, the other thing, I want to get Heather to respond to that, but the other thing that I would say is that, you know, when I went to the Bernie Sanders rally at the Auditorium Theater on the eve of the Illinois delegation, Illinois primary, I mean, when her name was mentioned, there were boos. I mean, yeah. 50% of the people were booing her. Look what happened in Nevada. I mean, people were booing and wouldn't even let Barbara Boxer speak. I mean, as someone who comes up through the democratic process, this has to worry you, I would assume, Heather.
Well, you know, I actually not. I mean, I think democracy is good for that. I mean, you want people to express their views. You want them to have a chance to actually identify with the candidate and get them involved in the political process, whoever it's for. So I don't see that as a negative. I do think there's going to be a lot of work in terms of trying to unify the party. I think there's not just Hillary Clinton's going to have to do that, but I think Bernie Sanders is going to have to do that. He has said he's going to spend 7 days, you know, 24/7, trying to keep Trump away. So I take him at his word and believe that he's going to work and try to bring along his support.
And when Bernie make, you know, just think about it. Bernie Sanders gets up there and he tells the American college student that he wants free college tuition. Everybody in the media laughs at him. And then he goes back and makes the case. You know, a B-1 bomber sitting on the tarmac in an Air Force base somewhere in the middle of Kansas, costs $325 million. It sits there. We don't really need it. We've got 14 Ohio-class nuclear submarines that can destroy and take out almost any target around the world.
And we could spend that money on college professors' retirements.
You could spend that money back, you know, back on tuition or anything else. You know, it's the old thing that one of the Labor Party advocates, Anthony Benn in Britain, said, if you've got the money to kill people, certainly you must have the money to heal people, to educate people. And I think Bernie Sanders makes a very valid and cohesive and cognizant point with that is resonating with the American college students.
Pat.
I just wanted to mention when I hear Heather and Mark talk about, you know, how when there's violence or this uproar at Democratic events, it's always a sign of the healthy nature of the Democratic system. But if it happens at a Republican, you know, anyone raises their voice at a Republican gathering, it's mob violence.
Mob violence, right.
So it's really the perspective is interesting.
The person from the podium is not saying, yeah, knock them out and I pay your legal fees. That's the difference here.
Let's go to calls.
Bernie
Jason.
Ain't writing a check for anybody.
Jason is listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio tonight, and he's calling from inside the Beltway. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, guys, just a couple of political facts here. First of all, any poll that does not include the Libertarian going forward is a null and void poll.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Right now, that Fox News poll that came out had Trump at 42 and Clinton at 39. Now, of course, I turn on the mainstream media and both of them go back and forth, making it seem like it's a two-person horse race. It's not any longer. This is a three-way race. And the fact that there's an off chance that Bill Weld, former governor of Massachusetts, a person that was reelected at over 70%, might be the Libertarian VP nominee, should scare the bejesus out of the political establishment, because these days of trying to put people in boxes is not going to work any longer.
Jason, the only thing I would say that I would question or not alter what you had to say is that if you're going to do polls, I would argue it's potentially a four-way race. that you have the the Green Party is on a lot of ballots in a lot of states. The Libertarians are on the ballot in a lot of states. In fact, they didn't show it on the graphic that I shared with you tonight, but I think it was one of the guests with George Stephanopoulos today who said that that Gary Johnson had polled at 8%. I mean, that's a figure that should be reported. If you're going to say, and by the way, every network says, tune to us because we're going to give you the complete coverage. It's all politics all the time. If you're going to do that, you don't leave two parties completely out of the picture. In my view,
let me just add one more thing to it, and that is to your guests that are there. Who is the anti-war candidate? Because it's not the Democrats or the Republicans. Who is the anti-police state? It's not the Democrats or the Republicans. And to the person that was talking about fiscal sanity, you mean the former governor of New Mexico that was 2-1 Democratic got reelected and balanced the budget for a solid 8 years? You're gonna run him against a Donald Trump? Come on, be honest. The person with the executive experience in this race actually turns out to be the Libertarian.
I agree with the caller. You know, as an outside candidate for myself, for my two runs for Congress, it always bothered me that they would say, you know, the professional wrestler and he's the underdog or he doesn't have any money. And, you know, the media has a lot of power with people. And if you're going to bring up a candidate and then immediately bring up that they might not have any chance or not even bring up the candidates, not even bring up certain parties at all, like you said, the Libertarian Party or the Green Party. I have a problem with that. I mean, that's just not fair, and that's just not part of the political process that we think should be.
I think the big money that everyone likes to criticize may wind up being the savior of our political system, and that is all it would take is the Koch brothers, for instance, to write a $200 million check to a super PAC that supports a Libertarian candidate, or maybe a Steyer on the left who would write a $200 million check to the Green Party, and now we've got a real contest.
Or Mark Cuban could write that check, too.
That's right. Yeah, he'd probably hand you the cash.
He'd like to write it himself. Listen, Jason, thanks for your call. Let's go to Joseph, listening to us on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Nice to hear from Texas.
Thanks, Bruce. Yeah, I'd like to respond to the panel member who thought Trump was a barbarian in the way he wants to fight ISIS. First of all, you know, if you recall, in World War II, we did bomb civilians. We firebombed Dresden, and we nuked Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the reason is we wanted to end the war quickly. And also the enemy was fighting kind of with, they were not observing the rules of warfare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And when you're fighting ISIS, you have the same situation. They don't wear uniforms. They're not following the international whatever rules of Queensbury.
Yeah, the Geneva Court, the mm-hmm. Geneva rules of war, right?
It's the Geneva Convention. So right. I mean, they are, and so all Trump wants to do is say, if there's a village where a lot of these terrorists are coming from, then we firebomb that village.
That's not what he was saying at all.
World War II, and in Japan, because we're fighting, you know, terrorists.
Go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, I think he directed that at me, so I'd like to respond. And that is, first of all, I think that the bombings in Japan were justified. We had given the Japanese multiple opportunities to surrender, and people forget they didn't surrender after the first bomb, right? I mean, and to invade, we estimated that we'd lose, I think it was 50,000, maybe 100,000 soldiers.
Half a million? It was Plan X. Plan X, and it was a million. They've estimated a million. Yeah,
there would have had to be a land invasion of Japan.
It would have been. Which was, right. Which so, was but this is something different. So what he is proposing was not bombing the village from which this terrorist might be located. He's saying we identified a terrorist among ISIS somewhere, and then we go back to his village and kill his family. Mothers, grandmothers, sister, niece, I don't know. But those are two different things.
Quick question. Do you really believe that he believes that, number two, or was he throwing red meat to a crowd of people who wanted red meat?
Well, a couple
of
things.
I need a 5-second answer.
I don't believe anything he says.
Okay, there you go.
And second of all, he's repeated it.
1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border. to border. Let's hear from you tonight, Pike.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Back. Before we go back to calls and questions, I just want to make a point that if anywhere within the sound of my voice, if you're listening to us in Chicago on WIND or WCGO or watching us on television, if you have anyone in your family who is a college student who's interested in a summer internship, internships are available at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in archives and marketing and public relations. And so if you have a smart, bright young student that is interested, they can send an email to me at brucedumont@museum.tv. brucedumont@museum.tv. Include a resume, but be very specific, a very short comment about what you would like to do. Again, you can spend several, five or six weeks here working and helping the Museum of Broadcast Communications, a nonprofit museum. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Nick, listening to us tonight on the internet. Go ahead, or on YouTube. Go ahead.
Hey, Bruce. How are you?
Fine.
And I was listening to some of the experts about maybe 30 minutes ago.
Yes.
And they were saying that Democratic supporters, like Bernie Sanders supporters, will just sort of line up and support Hillary. And I'm here to say no, absolutely not.
Why not?
I vote ideology and policy. I don't vote personalities, and I don't vote for parties. And what good does it do for me if I, quote, support Hillary, then she becomes president, and I wake up in the morning, and she works everything that I believe in. She works against me. How does that benefit me?
What will you do in November if Bernie is not the Democratic nominee? What are you going to do?
I will not support Hillary Clinton. I will vote for Dr. Jill Stein.
Okay. So the Green Party candidate, mm-hmm. You're going to vote for the Libertarian candidate?
Likely, yeah.
Crossed each other.
I will do that, and I will continue. I will continue to support progressive candidates at the local level, starting with our alderman in Chicago.
Okay. Well, so, listen. Thanks for your call. We do appreciate it. Let's go to Joel, listening to us on WRNN in South Carolina. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Okay.
I appreciate you guys listening to me tonight. The last guy that called in, he made a great point. I don't think that people that are going to vote for Hillary are going to turn around and vote for Bernie and vice versa. He made a great point. But I wanted to talk about one of the opening comments you made was you stated that Trump was willing to kill, let's just say, potential terrorist Muslims without due process. Isn't that correct? The gentleman there? Can he talk about that?
That was Todd.
What I had said was Trump was quoted as having said that he was going to kill the families of suspected terrorists. And you can draw whatever conclusions you like from that.
And as a Trump supporter, he did say that. I can concur.
Okay.
By the way, I thought he said known terrorists, and I thought he said it in a debate as opposed to terrorist suspects. But your point was that of all the things that Donald Trump has said, that is the thing that you find most reprehensible, or was that just the?
I mean, it's about a 500 way tie for first.
It kind of surprised me that you went to that one because it's. It might have been one of these things that was thrown out.
He's explicitly advocating a war crime.
No, and he thinks people would follow through it. Although the head of the CIA said they wouldn't follow the rules,
but
directive.
But to, again, speak for the people really outside the Beltway here, we have to remember that President Obama authorized the killing of an American citizen, mm-hmm. Anwar al-Awlaki, and his 16-year-old son.
Mm-hmm. Was also he authorized killed, it. He killed them.
Yeah, they were both killed. So that was our
without
Democratic constitutional scholar.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, who I voted for, who has done that. And so, you know, Trump is a risk for this kind of thing. And, you know, he said he's going to kind of continue that policy. And Hillary was part of this administration who supported
but
that.
Did so,
let's let Hillary respond. Not Hillary, but let's let Heather respond. Heather, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I she has come out very strongly against the kind of statements that Trump has been making in terms of suggesting that we should do these war crimes. I do not know what her role was, quite frankly, in whether she was part of that decision making. I do not know. Certainly, I don't think at this point that is something that she's been advocating for.
We can check the emails.
But one thing I do think this does speak to, though, is temperament. Is important in this. And I think what you're speaking to is I very concerning about a President Trump temperament and, you know, sort of loose cannons you can sort of think get misfired. And I really worry that this kind of loose cannon feel you have around Donald Trump and what kind of things that would actually lead to. I mean, with real consequences and real people getting potentially getting harmed, not just physically, but in so many different
ways. Senator, it is in the historical record. That the fact that Nixon and Reagan were considered loose cannons and were ready to push the button that changed the course of geopolitics and with involved with the USSR and in regards to with Vietnam. And you have Muslims that are burning people alive, chopping people's heads off. I mean, at some point you have to get down on their level and get down on the ground and roll around with them and play as hardball as they play.
But take the ISIS issue aside. He suggested that we would withdraw from South Korea. Now, if we do that, we're essentially sending a signal to Taiwan, to Japan, to the rest of our Asian allies that it's open season for China. So we have the choice now between –
But China
like you say,
is,
oh, excuse
right
me,
now is an ally of ours.
Let's go ahead.
We can agree to disagree on right. that. But saying, okay. We have the choice, as you said, a loose cannon, erratic – leader, and we have no idea if he means what he says or what he's going to do, or slow, steady, even-handed incompetence. Russia, Libya, goes on and on and on. As Secretary of State, I can't think of one country where things are better than they were.
How do you feel about Trump's comments this week that he would go and he would talk with the leader of North Korea? Is that a good idea? At least talk with him. Does anybody think that's a good idea?
I think it's a great idea. Again, going back to Nixon.
With no conditions.
Well, what conditions could you get from somebody that is a megalomaniac that's sitting on a nuclear arsenal?
Which one are you talking about?
We're talking about Kim.
I just want to make sure which one you were talking about.
But we should look at that in context, because he said on Monday that he would not necessarily continue to be an ally, close ally of David Cameron. Yet on Tuesday, then the next day, he says he wants
but
to go
Obama said the same thing about
with,
talking with dictators
with
around the world. He was running for office. What is the answer?
Well, and he was criticized severely by Hillary Clinton.
How else do you have change if you're not going to open some kind of dialogue?
Folks, 1-800-723-8289. We've just begun. Don't go away.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, John.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and... Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. We continue on Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations, including WIND Radio in Chicago. And we're going to talk, we should mention that our guest this evening, we have a former Kasich supporter who's now a Donald Trump supporter. We have a longtime conservative activist who is not going to vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. He's going to sit it out or maybe vote for Gary Johnson. That's Todd Stump. Mark Casello is here. He is for Bernie Sanders, sort of, but not as enthusiastic. No, you're a little more realistic now, but you know, you'll still be happy if he does it, but you don't think he's going to deliver on everything he's promised. And Heather Staines is here. She's an Illinois state senator, and she is for Hillary Clinton. We've been talking about the campaign, which as of this moment has Trump and Clinton neck and neck at 46-44. According to ABC, Washington Post today. And you were going to make a point, Todd, about Trump supporters.
If you look across the board, Democratic, Independent, Republican, the top issues in the issue matrix has been just utter disgust and distrust and an outrage over the incompetence of government. We can look at O'Hare Airport right now and the lines going up and down for hours. And that comes to, you know, just recently the Obama administration had to cop to the fact that they outright lied about the Iranian nuclear negotiations. People on both sides have been lied to about immigration. The Republicans have said, yes, we're really going to enforce this when the Chamber of Commerce doesn't want them to and isn't going to let them. The Democrats say they're going to enforce it, but they just want the votes. And Obamacare, you know, people were told they could keep their policies and they were just outright lied to. People are sick of it. I feel that the Trump candidacy and to a smaller extent the Sanders candidacy is people are saying, I don't care who is running. Anyone who gets rid of the political establishment and the political elites and the political class in this country should go. And the more they call him out and the more they say you're a liar, this, that, and the other thing, the more they're not ignorant of the fact that Donald Trump's not telling the truth or doing this all on impulse. But they're just saying, if this makes the people I don't like angry, I'm going to do more of it.
Heather, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there is real truth to that. I would just add a nuance. I think part of what's driving this group, though, is really just this growing income inequality and feeling like there is no space for the middle class and that nobody's been watching out for my interests here as this keeps going. And I think that that sort of coupled with a distrust in the policies and the way things are run, I think it's really just driving this anger and dismay over anyone anyone who's in power. So I think it's just an anti-incumbent, anti-establishment. I absolutely agree with that aspect to it.
Does that give you concern then that if those that are touching the nerve that are out there are Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, neither of them can be described as the establishment candidate? Hillary becomes the is and becomes and is marketed, at least by her opponents, as the establishment candidate. With all that's going on in the body politic, does that put her to some extent almost like an underdog in this race?
Well, and that is certainly why I think this is going to be a very close race. And I'm not one of those folks who thought that, if it's Hillary, Donald, Hillary's going to just wipe up.
Yeah.
I do think because of that anger and dismay that Donald Trump is going to, you know, he's going to have a strong and very continuing, very vocal support group. And I think she's going to have to really battle it out and figure out, as no one else in the Republican primary has been able to do, really figure out how do you sort of take him down a notch and actually get people to see the faults and what he would actually do to the country.
Mark, what do you think?
I don't think anyone did that in the primary.
Well, I was going to say, on the surface, it seems as if Bernie Sanders and Trump are both providing very simplistic solutions to very complicated problems. But I think on the Bernie side, what you have in the electorate is people who realize that these situations are very complex and interrelated. So while Bernie raises the specter of income inequality, I think a lot of his supporters see that that's symptomatic of failed government, poor policies, lack of education. And so I think ultimately Donald Trump, his voters are reacting on an emotional level, on this gut reaction, looking for some quick solution, some easy solution to America's woes, which are very complex.
John, do you believe that Bernie Sanders would be tougher to beat than Hillary Clinton?
I do, because you're going to Donald Trump would be going against an opponent that is also like Donald Trump and speaking from his heart and speaking what he actually feels. You talk about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump being a liar or whatnot. What is congressional approval ratings? 10%, 8%? I mean, we do nothing right in this country, for the exception of the military, and even that at best, I would question: do we do the military correctly?
If Bernie Sanders was the Democratic nominee, would that change your equation at all?
Well, first of all, I live in Illinois, and I can't think of a state that Bernie Sanders would carry. Barry Sanders would carry Michigan.
Yeah.
But I just want to get back to something that Mark said. You know, this is so typical of the condescension of the left, and that is the Bernie Sanders socialists are thinking people who have worked all this out, and they think we need more complex things. And the people on the right who are angry, they've just lost their cool.
What I was saying is that on the surface, both seem very simplistic. Bernie's solution, give everybody free college and free health care, and everything's going to be rosy. But I guess you're right. To be fair, there's many on the right, I'm sure, who don't think, you know, bombing terrorist families or just carpet bombing, as Ted Cruz said, until the sand glows.
But the average voter also says, what does government do? Should tell me.
Right.
What is government
and your
doing
point,
right?
Right.
You have no answers because
right,
you're not doing anything.
But we also have a situation right now that probably is touching on more individual voters. And that is, it gets into government competency, which was a real issue with George Bush. And that is what's happening at the TSA, what's happening in airline line. Why did the Obama administration know that this was going to be a problem? And why are they not fixing it quickly? Let's go to calls. Let's go to Quentin, listening to us in Macon, Georgia, on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Quentin.
Hey, guys. So I'm a first-time voter, and I'm just curious why – or what each core platform you guys are for and why.
All right. Heather, why are you for – give them a 30-second pitch for Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think she's, able to really focus on actually, the problems that keep people awake at night and when they're lying in bed and have problems, things like low wages, things like not being able to afford health care or college, or concerns over are we going to be safe? Are there going to be other terrorism events here? I think across all those kinds of issues, you're going to have in Hillary Clinton somebody who actually is going to be focused on actually trying to solve problems. I think when you turn to Trump, on, you just don't know what you're going to get. Well, I think it's very unclear.
That's for Hillary. Why should this guy, why should Quentin vote for Donald Trump, John?
Quentin, please listen to me. Other than a person getting into the White House who is unencumbered by big business, by the super PACs, is the only way, other than a revolution, that was going to change the political system in this country and the political process for 100 years. Nothing will ever change. It never does change unless you get somebody who's in the White House who has not one, does not tie to big business and a special interest.
Quentin, those are the pitches. You'll have to make your decision or call us back next week and find out whether either of them made their case. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont. Lots of calls standing by. We'll bring them into the conversation when we roll on from Chicago.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, John.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Back in Chicago, we got lots of people on the line. Let's go to Miami, where Ben is listening to us on Sirius XM satellite radio. Go ahead, Ben.
Hi, Mr. Dumont. You're just a mouthpiece for the Zionist lobby.
Oh, thanks very much, Ben. You're calling under a different name. You've called before, and you got through our screener, and congratulations. Steve, let's go to you in Denver, Colorado. Go ahead. You're on the air. Steve, are you there? Hello, Steve. I guess, well, Steve is not there as well, or the other guy was not there as well. This is Ben, by the way. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know there's a gentleman that calls in periodically. He got through the screeners tonight. He is an anti-Semite, and he makes to make a big point of that every time he calls. Let us go to getting back to some of the other issues. What are the issues that you think will be important? Donald Trump is the one that put the immigration issue on the table. He hasn't talked too much about it lately, but certainly when he announced it was he lit the candle insofar as the Hispanics are concerned, because he really ticked them off. But do you think that is an issue going forward, is going to be a hot button issue in the general election, John?
If he keeps pushing it, yes, it will. I mean, you're talking about ripping, 10 million people out of their homes. It, first of all, that's never going to happen. The American people will never stand for it. It's the only thing I have. I do agree with strong borders. We should have done it right after 9/11. I do agree with building a wall, but, displacing 10 million people is just not possible. One thing Donald Trump has not realized, and I've not heard yet in 9 months anyone of the pundits talking about it. You're going to take 10 million basically Mexicans out of this country, and Donald Trump is in the real estate industry. You figure we're going to take about 1 million Mexicans or Latin American people out of Illinois. What do you think that's going to do to the real estate industry? Do you think it'll help it or collapse it? Take 1 million people out of Chicago. Do you think it's going to help the auto industry or collapse the auto industry? These are two of the biggest industries in the country. And here's Donald Trump, this, real estate industrialist. And I don't think he realizes that displacing and taking 10 million people out of this country is pretty much just going to dismantle the real estate industry.
Well, the other
industry.
Point is, it would seem to me that it would have an impact on his hotels and his real estate, because a lot of Hispanics work in the hospitality business. Basically, I know several years ago, Chris Bury, when he was hosting a Nightline one evening, he said that, if the real – this was long before Donald right. Trump – is if there was a real strong crackdown on illegal immigration, you could shut down Las Vegas. Is that one of your concerns?
Shutting down Las Vegas?
I
wish it would have been done before I got there
time. No, about Donald Trump's immigration issue. Where does that come on your list of things that he has said that are outrageous? Mm. As a conservative, where do you come down on that issue?
I am pro-Constitution, and I am pro-rule of law. And I think one of the reasons that immigration is an emblematic issue for a lot of things in this country, a lot of the policies, and that is people are being lied to over and over. Right? Now, does he have the right solution? Absolutely not. But people are saying they're telling us that this is a law, but they refuse to enforce this law. And I don't necessarily agree with the kind of liberalization of immigration that the Libertarian Party advocates, but at least they are for a constitution and adherence to the Constitution. So I think it's going to be, no matter how you feel about immigration, this is just a placeholder, a vessel in which all of this distrust of government is going to go
I think the concern that I would have, and I've said this before, if you're a Trump supporter, mm-hmm. and we have many that listen and watch this show, mm-hmm. if you really believe that he is going to build the wall, which he might be able to do, mm-hmm. Mexico is not going to pay for it. I think everybody agrees with that. And there's not going to be a deportation of 10 or 12
Never
million.
Gonna happen.
That's not going to happen.
Never happen.
So it seems to me that those who are frustrated now, who've jumped in this vessel called Donald Trump, mm-hmm. they're going to be very disappointed when he has been president, if he ever becomes president, for a year or 2 years, and nothing has happened. Mark, mm-hmm. do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if Hillary's wise, she'll pivot this immigration issue to legal immigration related to student visas, the TN visas related to NAFTA. We've got a global economy. Our corporations are all over the world where we've created war zones where people are refugees and people want to come to America and they want to seek a better life here. We need to open our arms to legal immigration and make sure it's a fair playing field for people. Because you got people from Eastern Europe, you got people from Mexico and from Latin America trying to come into the country legally. But the restrictions on those TN visas and other visas are so strict that we're actually hurting our economy by not allowing the best people to come on in and give us their intellectual.
But illegal immigration is completely stressing the healthcare industry. It is completely stressing the government services because $30 billion a year goes back to Mexico and doesn't stay in this country, and they don't pay.
But many, many undocumented people who are paying their taxes into the system. They're working, you know, at these jobs, and they never collect the services back. They never collect their Social Security back.
I want to come back to Heather. Heather, as an elected official, Democrat elected official from the city of Chicago, a progressive area of the city, we might add, for those listening around the country, how often do you hear people complain about illegal immigration or demand stronger borders? Does that ever come up, even with maybe a progressive constituency that you might have?
Well, it does come up. Well, certainly the state of Illinois itself is very diverse. In my district, we are very welcoming to immigrants. There's folks, I would say, in a number of different ways, we have been making it a more welcoming place in Illinois, you know, making it so that you can get driver's licenses, so you can get insurance. Yeah. It keeps people safe. We've just recently been doing things like trying to make a level playing field to undocumented kids who are here for no fault of their own, but maybe something actions that their parents had taken, can now have access and at least compete for scholarships in our public universities. So we're trying to make it a level playing field. I hear support for that in my district. What I would say, though, is across Illinois, which is very diverse, we do get a mixed view. I do think, though, that I think the immigrant population has been a little bit dismayed under the Obama administration. I think this is a place that Hillary has space to, I think, garner more support. I think closing the detention centers, which she has said as part of her platform, she would not want to do that, and she would not want to continue on with sort of family detentions that have been happening here right now. So I think there's a way that we can do things that are not just tearing families apart. I agree we need to have the strong borders, and so does, and I think she's strong about that. But there's also a way that you can be humane in the way you implement that and not just run families apart. And this notion that we're ever going to sort of try to get rid of folks and send them back to their home countries in wholesale manner is just laughable.
This is,
I want to go to Todd, because you talked about the importance of law. Yeah. So, I mean, you are a hardliner, I would say, is that when somebody comes to this country illegally, they've broken the law, and they shouldn't get any benefit or any break on anything because they've broken the law?
No, listen, to call me a hardliner, I don't think is really accurate. But, you know, what Heather is suggesting is they are, the Democratic Party and pro-illegal immigration Republicans are intentionally creating a magnet to increase illegal immigration. So if you say you can get public benefits, you can get the benefit of free public education, you can get a driver's license, you can get this, that, and the other thing, that will naturally increase the amount of illegal immigration we have. And this is intentional on the part of the Democratic Party.
Can we really consider it illegal if the American government is consistently over 50 years perpetuating this, you come in, we won't tell, we won't really enforce
the law.
And let me talk about driver's license. I commend you. As an automobile dealer, as a friend of a lot of police officers, the legality and the ability for police officers to recognize and understand who exactly they're talking to or pulling people over. We're letting all these people into the country, but then we're going to say that it's illegal and we're going to crack down on it.
Well, let me ask the senator, would you advocate those driver's license indicating whether that person was a citizen or not? Because we know that illegal immigrants vote.
I would not, only because I don't think people would go and get them then.
Well, there
I mean,
we go.
Honestly,
but
I think,
do you believe
but
that
I do believe
illegal
I,
immigrants are voting in significant numbers in the United States?
I don't think we've had any evidence that there is fraud going on in our voting system.
And I wish Americans
and if there is,
vote.
We should stop that.
I'd just like to remind the viewers that we're in Chicago, Illinois.
But do you have evidence of that, Todd?
I'll tell you what. This is what the Democratic Party deliberately obfuscates this issue. Because when you say voter fraud, they mean voter impersonation. And the Brennan Center has been good. They said there's so few examples of voter fraud. They said there are very few. What there are very few examples of voter impersonation. That is, someone goes in to a voting booth and says, "I'm Joe Doakes," when he's actually John Q. Public. What they don't talk about are people who are registered illegally, who aren't American citizens, aren't eligible to vote, and they don't have to produce valid identification at the polling place, and they vote. And that happens all over the country. There were districts in Florida last time where more people voted than were resident.
Mark, do you see anything wrong with what he just described? Do you see something wrong with that?
I think the Americans don't even vote. The idea that there's massive numbers of undocumented people, seeking out voting when, they're under threat every day and constant surveillance of being deported from this country, which President Obama has been the deporter in chief. He's deported more Hispanics and undocumented immigrants than other presidents.
That's not true.
But back to your point, Bruce, about what issues might pop up in the campaign, one thing I think that's really important should be discussed is prison reform, the shift away from militarization of law enforcement in communities. That should be a hot-button issue in this debate.
Agreed.
Everybody agrees with that, and we'll see what happens. Everybody agrees on that issue, but again, the bill is not making it through Congress.
I don't think a town of 5,000 people in Dothan, Alabama, needs a military vehicle that could, that came from Afghanistan.
We've got a pause. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Todd, I want to ask you a question because you've said earlier in the broadcast you absolutely will not vote for Trump. You absolutely will not vote for Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. You're leaning towards Gary Johnson.
That's right.
Is that a strong lean?
No, it's not. Well, first of all, I have the luxury of not having it matter that much because I live in Illinois, and this is likely going to be a Democratic state.
Right.
So it's, you know, if it was everything was even and I had yep. to make a choice, I don't know what I would do. But there are certain things about the libertarian platform that I'm not crazy about, or the libertarian philosophy. But, you know, they say the difference between socialism and libertarianism is at least socialism works on paper. Right. So but I would probably vote for them because I think it's important that we break up this duopoly in our government.
Is there
system.
Anything that Donald Trump could say or do that would change your mind so you would again cast your vote for the Republican candidate?
I resign. Yeah. That, okay. If he stepped down, yes, I might vote for a Republican, but under no circumstances.
OK,
I vote for him.
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Bonnie listening to us on the northwest side of Chicago. Go ahead, Bonnie.
No, actually, I'm in northwest Indiana. But
oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Listen, I have 3 points to make, and I'm going to make them real quick because they're all real controversial.
Okay.
you had said, Bruce, that there's no way that they can make Mexico pay for the wall. That's untrue, because if you're going to say, let's say that you're going to send $3 billion to Mexico in various aid programs, and the wall costs, say, $1 billion, then you just send them the difference. You send them $2 billion. That's just basic arithmetic. The second thing I would say is, to Heather's point of tearing families apart, think about it, Heather. When you break the law, sometimes there's a consequence that has to be suffered. So if the person has to, say, go back home to Mexico or whatever, you're not tearing the family apart because the family has the option to join the person. Now, think about somebody who broke the law, like, oh, let's say Rod Blagojevich. Why, he and his family were torn apart because he had to suffer a consequence. He was sent to prison. So it's not extraordinary to separate a family as a consequence of breaking the law.
All right, stop and for just one. Bonnie, stop before we get to your third point. Let's let the senator respond to that question.
Okay.
Well, you know, in these cases, though, I mean, I fully believe that we should be creating pathways for legal citizenship for folks that have been here for, in many cases, you're talking about folks who have been here for years and years. Their whole family roots are here. Their kids have, in many instances, have not even been to that home country, wherever their parents may have come from, and are contributing members here. They're paying their taxes. They're doing everything that they can as well. So, you know, I really do believe that once – I believe we should have stronger borders and not let that happen. But once folks have been here, and they've been here for years and years, I don't think we could create an environment in which we're going to be sending folks back. I think just the practicality of really trying to do this to 10 million people, it's not going to happen.
I want to ask you a follow-up on your pathway. According to my reading of the legislation that was making its way through the Senate, it's the thing that George Bush wanted, Ted Kennedy. It was the comprehensive plan. When they talked about what an illegal immigrant had to do now, is under what they wanted, what everybody a lot of people agreed with, was that if you were an illegal immigrant, you would have to go and report to the government, put your name on a list, be willing to pay a fine, set up that you have to learn English. I think that was part of it. And then you would go back to your country, and you'd stay there for a period of time, and then you would get in line, and you would come back, and you would be eligible to come back in the country again. Is that a summary of what that was for?
Yes.
Did I properly summarize
that? You did.
Now, I keep in mind, that's what everybody has been clamoring about. The Republicans, the Democrats, everybody think that's just the magic answer. And my question is, if you are an illegal, you even referenced this in the last segment, why would anyone who's, again, in the shadows, why would you want to come forward and put your name on a list?
They're not going to. Why not just matriculate them into the system?
I think many would. I think they would like to do that legally, particularly if it can accrue benefits to their kids. I mean, all sorts of people make all sorts of very hard decisions for themselves in the interest of their children. And I think that's a large driving force.
Even not in your name on the list, you'd be willing to pay a fine.
Sure.
You think they would do that?
Oh, I absolutely do. I know people who would definitely do that. But the key piece that's missing from this puzzle, of this immigration puzzle, and this gets to Donald Trump's points about trade agreements, is that we, with NAFTA, fundamentally transformed the Mexican economy. And we created part of this problem by flowing our goods and our jobs into Mexico and took people from rural economies where they were farming and living a peaceful life and pushed them into the cities, into Mexico City. The population exploded in Mexico City since the 90s, creating massive poverty, totally upset their economic system. And those people have flown into our country and traveled into our country for opportunities and for safety many times because of conditions that we helped fundamentally create.
No, but I thought you said that they were creating jobs down there in Mexico. So if their jobs are being created in Mexico, why are they not staying in Mexico? You're saying I'm hearing two sides of this argument here.
Okay, so you've got a couple things operating in the Mexican economy. That it's got a central government that's very weak, the local state governments.
Corrupt.
There's corruption. We're from Chicago. We're familiar with this. Governor Blagojevich is in jail. So because of that corruption, the jobs aren't shared equally. There's a massive amount of poverty, and people seek opportunity. And the United States, you know, if we don't want Mexicans in our country, maybe America shouldn't have taken Mexican land and the people, you know.
Come on.
All right, so, let's go. Go ahead, John.
Can I make my
third point? Make your third point, Bonnie.
Okay, thank you. And my third point has to do with, the Democrats always talk about fairness. You know, people who hop in front of other people in line, that's patently unfair. And for employers, now see, and you talk about how to make them go home. Well, obviously, you can't just round up 11, 12 million people. But, you know, if they were to have enforcement for employers who hire illegals and use E-Verify and other systems, the technology is out there, you know, then the individuals would not be able to work. And the employers, if they had very severe penalties for them to hire illegals, they wouldn't hire them. And guess
now
what?
You're, Bonnie,
they wouldn't
now,
be
now,
they
you, now, now you have put your you put the nail on the head insofar as why much of this immigration issue goes back to members of Congress, many of them Republicans, many of them supported by the Chamber of Commerce, because they're the ones that don't want E-Verify or they don't want E-Verify enforced. And you're now talking about the Speaker of the House. One of the things that I'm concerned about is you've got Donald Trump, who gets going with a presidential campaign based on a hardline immigration issue. And now he's expected by the news media to go and kiss the ring of Paul Ryan, who single-handedly has been standing in the door, not moving forward on E-Verify. You can, if you're not for E-Verify and the strict enforcement of E-Verify, you're not serious about illegal immigration.
Can I give you a business perspective?
You're talking about building a wall. You're talking about punishing the people that come over. But you're not talking about punishing the people who should be punished. They are the serial abusers of the immigration. And many of them are Republican, some Democrats, not all business people are Republicans. But that's a piece of this puzzle that nobody wants to talk. There's no punishment.
Democrats there. Want the votes. Republicans want the – Republican big
wants
business
the cheap
wants the cheap labor.
You know, from
and
a business man's perspective, please. You know, we don't have the money to deport everybody. You've left the door open for 50 years. You've given everybody a wink. Come on in. This is the simple solution, okay? We need to stop the flow of money back into Mexico. So you take the 10 million illegal immigrants, you give them driver's license, you give them Social Security cards, you give them a 10-year reprieve on collecting on the benefits so they can put back into the system. You're taking the E-Verify system off the table. You're now putting all those people on the rolls of who they are, where they live, what their name is,
this
and
is
you're giving
all,
them a social security.
This
you've
is
let
all,
them. You've let them in the country.
This is
and now,
all,
now you're going to penalize me as a business person to get rid of this labor.
This
and
is
you're going to take my tax dollars to throw them out of the country when
you've
let them in.
You're missing.
I want their money to pay for the health care, to pay for the schools. I'm sick of paying for it when they are not and their children are using my services that I pay for. You let them in the door. Now give them the opportunity to participate in the system without throwing them
back. I got
back
your point. You're living. You're all talking about some fantasy land where you're going to rely on the federal government to enforce the laws that have been passed. So will somebody, an illegal immigrant, sign up for this program? Of course they will, because they know there are zero consequences.
No, that's not
and,
true.
Excuse me. And the other point is that nothing will happen on this issue until there's some trust built. And your caller is absolutely right. Fairness begins with the federal government enforcing the law. And that doesn't mean this hyperbole. About
any law.
Any law, rounding people up and all this nonsense. But I tell you what, stop the problem from growing first. And once that's proven, then we can talk about everything else. But all of this other nonsense is just fantasy. And one thing I have to say is this primitivism that is so rife inside socialism that all these people were happy dirt farmers somewhere. And, you know, I could see the Soviet poster. I mean, why shouldn't they be able to move to a city and
15 seconds.
Take on a different job?
Yeah, no, it's not primitivism, but thank you for the nod to that. No, it's a fact.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks for being with us. Don't go away. We'll be back.
Soterra Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Jeannie's listening to us down there. Jean, go ahead. Are you there?
Guys, great conversation. Needs to happen. It's still going on, you know. I just want to say, 3 years ago, I lost a job of 12 years, and when I tried to find, you know, any kind of work, I went to a well-known chain restaurant, walked in, asked for the manager, no one spoke English, and I did my interview, did not get the job. Now, I remember thinking later, you know, how is it that I'm going to food pantries and there were people working here that did not speak English? I mean, I was just crazy out of my mind thinking, this isn't right. Now, fast forward, I'm an independent contractor cleaning houses. Things have gotten better a little bit. I'm still struggling. I'm not going to food pantry, so that's a big plus. But, guys, these are the conversations. I'm the kind of people that we don't get the mic, whether it's CNN. Nobody back in the day, 70s, people did. They went on the street, and they talked to people about their lives. No one does that. We see here all these pundits, and God bless y'all. I mean, I love this conversation, but how many people are listening to this that are in my poor bracket, you know, that are in my tax bracket? I mean, I think the frustration is that we, the people, do not get the mic enough. I mean, I hear the same old pundits on every show, even Dr. Drew. God bless him, has, you know, a live audience every now and then, gives them the mic, but it's the same pundit. And guys, this, you know.
But Jeannie, where are you now? Did you say that you're now working
cleaning
now?
Cleaning houses. I'm cleaning houses. Yeah, I'm cleaning houses for a living as a subcontractor. So things are a little bit better. And I called you years ago when I started selling bread at the farmer's market, Singing Lady Banana Bread. And I was, you know, and things have gotten a little better. But honestly, I'm still struggling. I'm still not doing. And I live in Austin, where supposedly it's the land of everyone's moving here. It's just not the
but
case
is there
either.
But when you say there are people down there obviously that need their houses cleaned, is the competition for what you do, are many of them Mexicans?
Yes, and they work for companies if they're only paying them $9 an hour versus, you know, I charge way more per hour for that, but I don't have as many clients to get ahead like they do. And so I'm Mexican born. I'm an American who's Mexican, born and raised in Texas. And my family at the dinner table and at holidays in the past couple of years has been, we need immigration. We need this to stop. I mean, this has affected everybody, and yet we don't do this.
So when Donald Trump said what he did, what was your reaction?
Did you think I was offended? Hell no, no way. And you know what? I voted for Bernie Sanders. You know, and I'm praying some miracle's going to happen and he's going to go all the way, which it doesn't look like it's going to. But, you know, if he doesn't, guys, I'm done for Donald Trump. And half my family is, too. We're all Mexican. My family's from Mexico. But the people who have issues with Donald Trump are the ones that are illegal immigrants, are the immigrants that have been here, maybe now have made a living, you know. But they're not assimilating here in Texas. I've worked in the hotel industry also. And they don't try to speak English. I'm not saying all of them. Of course, some of them they love America and want to be here. But that's like 1-3%. If someone really did honest interviews with immigrants, I guarantee you they would not do it, you know, with their faces shown. But they would say, no, I know someone personally who said,
right, let's let John wants to respond, and then we've got another caller.
That's why my plan of giving illegal immigrants a Social Security number, you're going to take them out of that underground economy, the ability of the employer to pay them under the table. You're going to bring them out, and you're going to bring them on the open playing field with all the other Americans, and that $9 is no longer going to be sufficient, and they're going to be paid on your level, and it's going to level the whole playing field for all employees.
Jeannie, thanks for your call from Austin, Texas. Let's head further southwest to Mesa, Arizona. Robert is listening to us tonight on POTUS 124. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. You know, here in Arizona, I live in Maricopa County, where we've been the lightning rod for this issue, immigration
yes,
issue.
Absolutely.
But the fact
Sheriff
of the
Joe.
You know, with Joe Arpaio. You know, the fact of the matter is, when Sheriff Joe was doing what he's doing, has now caused us taxpayers here in Maricopa County hundreds of millions of dollars for what? To round up janitors and landscapers? You know, the real problem is what's going on with these trade agreements, TPP, NAFTA. They have really screwed our economy over because they're shipping jobs to Mexico. They're shipping jobs to Asia. The fact of the matter is, I'm Mexican-American as well. My family's lived in Arizona almost 200 years. So we have a vested interest with our ancestral lands here. The issue is that we need to start bringing these individuals out of the shadows. I mean, it's weird that I can walk into any gun store and in 15 minutes walk out with an AR-15, but somebody who wants to come here to the United States legally has to wait 3 to 5 years to get their paperwork is totally ludicrous. We are in the 21st century. This should not be going on. Our immigration system is broken. We have Cubans coming here. Once they touch dry land, they get their green card. You know, we need to fix it. It is so dysfunctional. You know, and everybody says, well, Mexicans, and Donald Trump was one of the ones saying we got rapists and murderers coming across the border. That is the biggest fat lie that I have ever heard. I used to work for Immigration and Customs Enforcement as a detention officer for one of the large private prison companies here in Arizona. And I tell you, a lot of the people who are here who happen to get caught, no thanks to Sheriff Joe and his minions, are here because they want to work. They want to contribute to our society. A lot of the people that are getting in trouble are not the immigrants. Nine times out of ten, it's second and third generation Hispanics who are doing stupid things that get themselves in trouble. I see it every day. I live in a neighborhood here in Mesa, and where I'm talking to you from. We have immigrants from Mexico, Guatemala, South America here, and we're all able to get along and do what we need to do every single day, and it's unfair for other places around this country who have no idea what's going on here to say that X, Y, and Z is going on, but yet don't take the time and bother to come.
Robert, listen, we are out of time. I thank your call. You offered a great deal to this conversation this evening. I thank you very much. Our guest this evening, Mark Casello has been here, and Heather Staines has been here, and Todd Stump has been here, and John Allen Stewart have been here. This program is a Jenny B production. Our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Fritz Goldman and Dan Dorfman. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.